Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ted Kennedy was, like his brothers John and Robert, a towering national figure. And like them, he was a towering local figure, heir to a remarkable lineage through Boston, New England politics, and the long reach and memory of Irish America. Now Ted Kennedy has passed on, and his death is felt uniquely, distinctly, in his own backyard. The Kennedy power, mystique, history, touch. This hour on Point, we're opening the phone lines to Senator Ted Kennedy's home turf in Boston and beyond. You can join the conversation. What's your local memory of Ted Kennedy? What's your story of the man and family who for so long defined New England political power and pride? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to go very, very directly and deliberately local in this hour, looking at the home turf of Ted Kennedy. But of course, people are talking about him and have been talking about him from all over as country awaited and his colleagues awaited what was clearly his imminent death. They were talking already over the weekend. Here's Senator John McCain on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, asked about Senator Kennedy's absence and its impact on negotiations over health care reform.
No person in that institution is indispensable, but Ted Kennedy comes as close to being indispensable as any individual I've ever known in the Senate, because he had a unique way of sitting down with the parties at a table and making the right concessions, which really are the essence of successful negotiations. So it's huge that he's absent, not only because of my personal affection for him, but because I think that health care reform might be in a very different place today.
We're going to get very local in this hour, but there's the Arizona senator talking about Ted Kennedy last weekend. And here, talk about far afield, former President Jimmy Carter, who Ted Kennedy challenged for the Democratic nomination in the 1980 elections. Here he was traveling in Ramallah on the West Bank today. He spoke of his respect. This is former President Carter for Senator Kennedy.
He's been staunch and honest and open and very able to express his views to the American people, and my own hope is that his deep commitment to a comprehensive health plan in our country will be honored now by his contemporaries, by his peers, in the near future. But we've already expressed, my wife and I, our condolences and our prayers to the family, and I don't think there's any body that serves in the U.S. Congress now that could possibly be missed by the American people as much as Ted Kennedy.
Former President Jimmy Carter on Ted Kennedy, and talk about emotion. Here's his longtime colleague, Democrat Robert Byrd, 50-year veteran of the Senate, delivering his emotional tribute to his colleague, Senator Kennedy, on May 20th, after hearing the news that Kennedy had been diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor. He broke down when he referred to the affection he and his late wife, Irma, felt for the Massachusetts senator.
Ted, my dear friend, I love you, and I miss you, and Irma, my darling wife, Irma, would want to say, thank God for you, Ted. Thank God for you.
From the Arizona senator, from Jimmy Carter in Ramallah, from Robert Byrd in the well of the Senate, let's bring it home to Kennedy country. You can join us, 800-423-8255. Joining me now from Boston is Kevin Cullen, columnist and longtime reporter for the Boston Globe. Kevin, thank you very much for being here today.
Hey, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor of the Atlantic Monthly magazine, native of Dorchester, Massachusetts. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom and Kevin.
Kevin, hometown hero, Ted Kennedy. Not to everyone, not always, and he had his rough patches on his own turf, to be sure. Your thoughts on this figure, on this day, the day Ted Kennedy has died?
What a life.
Yeah.
But more than any, I've actually written the first line for tomorrow's column, and I guess I'll share it with you. Those who disliked Ted Kennedy the most knew him the least. I say that because I recall a few years ago I was walking in the Senate Russell building on my way to see you-know-who, and I literally bumped into Orrin Hatch, a senator from Utah, a Mormon. And I think Orrin figured out very quickly where I was heading. He goes, I know where you're going.
Yeah.
But we could talk. We just I just said, how come you guys are so friendly? And he turned deadly serious, looked me in the eye, and said, I love Ted like a brother. And it was just a very profound, moving moment. Because here are two guys that really wouldn't agree on much politically. And yet, like all brothers who argue and fight, they could be civil to each other. They could actually make laws together. And I was so struck by this. The last time I really thought about Ted in all of this was last week when I saw that image at the town meeting in Dartmouth when Barney Frank, confronted by a person carrying a poster in which a Hitler mustache was drawn on the President of the United States image. And, you know, some people would say Barney was restrained, if anything. But I also thought that the level of debate, where it's gone in this country, it's like the antithesis of what Ted Kennedy was about. Because more than anything, he got laws written. He got things done. And he did it because, it's like what I come back to, if you knew Ted Kennedy, it was very hard to dislike him. And that doesn't matter. Like I said, there were the two people in Washington that I know for a fact who are praying hardest for Ted for the past year are Orrin Hatch and Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas. And politically, they couldn't be farther to the right from Ted. But as they would all tell you, they're brothers.
Kevin Cullen, Jack Beattie, I want to bring it right home to Boston. And maybe let's do that with a little piece of tape that goes way, way back here, back to 1962, Ted Kennedy's first run for the Senate. This was for the seat vacated by his elder brother, JFK, who had gone to the presidency. He was up against Attorney General Edward J. McCormick, Jr., the nephew of U.S. House Speaker John McCormick. Of course, he was a scion of quite a family himself. He had just turned 30, just gone past the age required in the U.S. Constitution for a member of the Senate. And at their famous debate in South Boston during that first run, here's his opponent, Edward McCormick, who went straight at the very young Ted Kennedy, saying he was running merely on his family's name.
If his name was Edward Moore, with his qualifications, with your qualifications, Teddy, if it was Edward Moore, your candidacy would be a joke. But nobody's laughing. Nobody's laughing. Nobody's laughing because his name is not Edward Moore.
Edward Moore Kennedy standing there in 1962 in debate in South Boston. Ted Kennedy, Marty Nolan writes in the Globe today, looked pained and shocked. His silence created a wave of sympathy. But that wasn't exactly an easy introduction for the youngest of nine, Jack Beattie, into big politics in Massachusetts.
I saw that, yes. And, of course, as you say, there was irony in it, in that Eddie McCormick was a scion of a political family as well. But he did hold a prominent public office, attorney general. In further on in that debate, Edward McCormick looked at him and he said, you know, you haven't worked at day in your life. And the next morning, Ted Kennedy was down at Four River Shipyard in Quincy, and he was at the 7 o'clock shift shaking hands with workers as they went in, and this big beefy guy came up and grabbed his hand. He said, Mr. Kennedy, I want you to know one thing. What's that? You haven't missed a thing. You know, and people, I think, accepted that so what, he hasn't worked a day in his life. His campaign slogan for that year said it all. He can do more for Massachusetts.
Kevin Cullen, of course, you know, he mixed it up with the biggest political powers in the country. But what about his lifelong ties to home, to right here in the greater aura of Boston and Hyannisport, and Ted Kennedy's connection there? Did it stay fully alive?
Yeah, well, I think that there are probably two Ted Kennedys legislatively. We're talking about a guy that gets things done in the Beltway. But when it comes to bringing bacon home, nobody was better at it. But I think the other thing is, if you talk just I've been in this business a long time. Everybody has a Teddy Kennedy story out of Boston and Massachusetts. And part of this goes to the other legacy of Ted Kennedy. He has and always has had great staff. And if you go through Washington now, not just on the Hill anywhere, it's almost like an all-star team. You can trace all these people that used to work for Ted Kennedy. But even in the local offices, I mean, I got a call from a rep in Hanover who told me about, you know, there was this kid in his district who was dying, and they needed to get him to Seattle for a experimental treatment. And, you know, Ted got a plane, or more specifically, Ted's staff got a plane, and they got the kid out there. And you can just go right down the line of people. I talked to a woman the other day who told me she called Kennedy's office because all of a sudden her mail service got terrible. It went from she would get the mail at noon and she was getting it late, sometimes it missed. She made one phone call to the staff and things got fixed. It was just, he did that. And he did it because, like I said, he always attracted very good people to his staff because the reputation that Teddy had on the Hill and even here in Boston was he lets you work. And that's what young people want to do, and even not so young people. When I think of the longevity of his staff, like Emily Winterson, who's, you know, one of his key people here in Boston, she's been there, I shouldn't say forever, Emily will kill me, but she's been there for a long time. So there's that continuity too, and there's always the fresh blood that comes up that wants to work for Ted Kennedy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are opening our phone lines this hour to our local listeners in Kennedy Country, Boston, and beyond for your memories, your thoughts on Ted Kennedy, dead last night at 77. Kevin Cullen of the Boston Globe joins us, our own Jack Beattie. We're going to go to the phones a lot in this hour, but I want to get a fresh report, if I may, from Hyannisport and Kennedy Compound Country from Steve Brown, WBUR reporter, who's on the scene. Steve, thanks for being there. What's the scene in Hyannisport right now?
Well, Tom, the media is descending on the small streets of Hyannisport, all lining up Scudder Avenue leading down to the Kennedy compound. I got here about 2:45 this morning. There were about a half dozen cameras already set up. Right now, I, without exaggeration, there's probably about 150 people, technicians and reporters and cameramen and all sorts of types lining the street there. This location has been long identified with the Kennedys, and I think there's a sense of resignation that this is probably the last hurrah.
Steve, what do you know about exactly what the circumstances were at the time of Ted Kennedy's death? Exactly where was he? Who was there? Do we know?
We've been told that that he was surrounded by his family. One of the police officers that I spoke to suspects that it was probably earlier in the evening than we may have been led to believe, giving the police a chance to come down and secure this neighborhood. They've got some roadblocks up, trying to keep the traffic down to a minimum. There are some people who are walking in, and there was one woman who dropped a bouquet of flowers and a balloon. And another fellow put a red, white, and blue boat buoy, one of those things, those bumpers that you hang off the side.
Sure.
He hung it on the street sign there with R.I.P. Teddy on it.
And he was home at the time of his death. Have you seen family coming and going? Is it clear? Is there helicopter, boat, car traffic there?
There's no family seen coming or going. The funeral home, probably around 5 o'clock this morning, they sort of did a little shuffle with some hearses that came through so that the cameras wouldn't know which hearse the senator's body was in. There were two or three hearses that had come back, more van-type hearses, to presumably collect the senator's body.
Can you see, Steve, is this a famously well-loved sailing boat there at anchor?
The boat is out in the harbor. There's a number of them out there. The Maya is moored not that far from his home.
WBUR reporter Steve Brown in Hyannisport. Thank you very much, Steve. Kevin Cullen, can you imagine the scene there? Can you imagine what comes next?
You know, the one image I was thinking of this morning is that, you know, Ted died where his father sat in a chair, in a wheelchair, for last years of his life, incapacitated by a stroke. Mm. And it's very moving to think of that image, and that Teddy would have been looking out over the same water vista that his father Joe did, and yet Joe really couldn't say much the last few years of his life. I'm just struck by that image.
Jack Beatty, the Kennedys went to the highest peaks of American politics, the White House into kind of fame, even into mythology here, but the roots are just as deep and intimate with the streets of Boston as any political families could possibly be.
Yes, indeed. On his mother's side, the Fitzgerald side, John F. Honey Fitzgerald was a very prominent Irish-American congressman. He represented the north end of Boston, which was in his day just becoming an Italian area, and it's to John F. that we owe Columbus Day as a national holiday. That was his gesture to the Italian-Americans of his district. And then he became a mayor of Boston and a very influential and dynamic figure, ousted in a comic interlude by James Michael Curley. It turned out that Honey Fitz was especially close to a young woman named Toodles Ryan, who was worked in a roadhouse, as they called it, in Woburn. And Curley, to get him out of the race, said that he was going to give a series of lectures, and one of the first ones was going to be Great Courtesans of History from Cleopatra to Toodles. and that did it. Mrs. Honey Fitz put her foot down, and John F. withdrew, and then became a kind of hanger-on in New England politics, but certainly passed the torch. And then from the Kennedy side of the family, Joe Kennedy didn't go into politics, but his father, Patrick, was in politics. He was a city councilor, represented East Boston, was an important sort of kingmaker in the clubhouse politics of the era. And so politics and Irish America in generous portions from both sides.
Kevin Cullen, of course, John and Bobby and Ted, especially for many decades, right on up into the high Washington circles. But did that history, that family political history, you know, recede from top of mind with them? Was it still present in the way Ted Kennedy saw the world?
Yeah, I mean, I always go back to I was lucky enough to be allowed to go through Rose Kennedy's papers at the Kennedy Library a couple of years ago. And the one image I took from going through a lot of Rose's diary is just how much these kids sat around the table, whether it was, you know, in Boston or when they lived in New York, and then in London when Joe Sr. was the ambassador. They were engaged in politics and what you would call public service from a very young age, and it was sort of drilled into them. The other remarkable thing about that dinner table is that there was an equal place there for the women. And it's also very poignant that Eunice died so yes, soon before Ted, because obviously she was never a public official, and yet she had a heck of a public life, and she affected millions of lives for the better. And it's because she kind of grew up in that same environment where if you were a Kennedy, you were expected to do something. You weren't expected just to count your money and go to parties, and certainly they did enough of that. But there was this sort of public service that was served along with the potatoes at every meal.
As president of the United States or lion of the Senate in Ted Kennedy's case, or founder of the Special Olympics. Let's get those phone lines open right here. Steve in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air. What's your memory of Ted Kennedy?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thank you for having me on. Mm-hmm. This is a day full of special memories for me. It happens coincidentally that exactly 12 years ago today, my late wife, Francesca, who was a lifelong passionate supporter of Ted Kennedy, also died of brain cancer. Mm. And I remember the day we met, together we met Ted Kennedy. We had been working on his Senate campaign in the 80s, and a party was given for the supporters, and we were waiting for him to arrive. We're in a small group of four people, not far from the door to the house, and we felt a presence join us in the room. We turned, and sure enough, there was a man of enormous charisma who had just come in the door, and he came over to our small group. And to my surprise, he joined into the conversation and said, "How are you doing, Francesca?" And started asking her about her family and whatnot. And I was asking her afterwards, "My God, had you ever met Ted Kennedy before?" And she said, "Steve, do remember that he is a politician, and we weren't we were wearing name tags."
she had a full presence of mind, Francesca. That,
sometime last night, they met for the second time, and this time without name tags, he was naturally drawn to a good-looking woman in the room, came over, put his arm around her, and said, "Francesca, good to see you again."
well remembered. And thank you, Steve, for that story on this day. Let me meet a couple more right here. Ruthie in Malden. You're on the air, Ruthie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I've been a community organizer. I've always been a community organizer. And just I'm so grateful for his unsurpassed commitment to social justice issues and to poor people's issues. I've always worked with poor people. Back in the mid to late 80s, there was a big piece of national anti-hunger legislation, which included expanding food stamps, summer lunch, school lunch program, et cetera. And I worked for the Massachusetts Anti-Hunger Coalition at the time and was active with the Food Research and Action Center in Washington. And we did a lot of work on the bill, but lots of people did, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds nationwide. So the bill did pass, and we were all very happy. And soon after, I was in my 20s, and I lived with a bunch of adults in a apartment in Malden. And my roommate said, the phone rang, and she said, "Ruthie, it's Ted Kennedy for you." And I just started cracking up. I said, "Yeah, and I'm the Queen of England," I said, as I answered the phone.
Yeah.
And he said, "Ruthie, Ted Kennedy here. Just want to thank you for all your work on the bill. You guys did such good work up there in Massachusetts." And I was a bit starstruck. I kind of went, thank you very much, Senator."
And that was it? No, what did he want a campaign contribution or a meeting?
Not at all. This was 9 p.m. at night. You know, I was one of thousands of people who had worked on this bill, literally. And he took the time to call people personally. I'd never talked to him before.
but it wasn't the Queen of England that day. Ruthie, that's a great memory as well. Thank you. And let me get one more right here. Jill in Natick, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Jill.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for having the show.
Sure.
I have a brief message. I was devastated when Ted Kennedy was diagnosed with cancer, but I wanted to say that in Massachusetts, you know, some people say that, well, he got the great health care because he was wealthy and known, but the number of people that he has helped who have no money in Massachusetts doesn't always get into the national news. And I just know that anyone who calls his office with a housing problem or even with health care or getting family members from overseas to join their people here, no matter what the problem is, he always goes out of his way to help the local people here in Massachusetts.
Jill, we've got it. Let me get an example of that maybe right here. Lewis in Boston, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling to express my gratitude for the work that Senator Kennedy has done over the years to keep our nation at peace. And I speak about a situation when I was 21 years old and I filed for discharge from the military as a conscientious objector. And my application was not processed properly, and I was activated for 14 months Vietnam. And I knew that I was not willing to serve, and that I was not willing to go to Canada, but willing to go to jail if necessary. But I went to Senator Kennedy's office and spoke to his aides and explained exactly what I was going through and gave them a copy of my application as a conscientious objector. And through Senator Kennedy's help, there was a congressional inquiry, and I was later honorably discharged as a CO, and have spent the past 38 years of my life working and peace and social justice issues. And my heart is heavy today as we really mourn the loss of a champion in the peace movement.
There's a real difference in your life, not off to Canada, not off to jail, but with the help of Senator Ted Kennedy in this case, conscientious objector status and honorable discharge. Kevin Cullen, what do you hear in this first raft of callers on Ted Kennedy and his legacy here?
Well, I remember that old Bill Buckley line that he'd rather have, you know, the first 100 guys listed in the Boston phone book than somebody from Harvard as president, I think he said. You could call every person, I think, in the Boston phone book and get a story. I really believe this is true. And a lot of it's longevity, but a lot of it is what that fellow responded to. I think that Ted Kennedy and his staff were incredibly attentive to constituents' needs. And everybody that came and called, it's very seldom you get a call that I get a call, because everybody drops dimes to people like me,
yep,
saying that, you know, I called Kennedy's staff, or I called Kennedy's office, and they gave me the runaround and really screwed me, blah, 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 all this stuff. You never hear that. And that's rare in this day and age. But it does go to show how, you know, we think of him as this beltway figure or this national icon, but he was very much rooted here. Through an extraordinary staff.
Jack Beatty, there's an arc to a life. I mean, you're a Dorchester kid. Can you remember back to your first sense of the Kennedys and this Kennedy in particular, Ted, and how your perception of him may have changed over the decades since and all that public service?
Well, I have to say that as a very young man in that Senate campaign, I actually handed out cards for the other candidate, the third candidate in the race, H. Stuart Hughes.
Okay.
A Harvard professor, and who ran against the nuclear arms. And to me, at 19, whatever I was, years of age, that seemed to me the issue of the day. And that was my position. But I certainly became aware of Ted Kennedy then. And really, he made I became even more aware of him in 1964 when he had a terrible plane accident, and he was with Birch Bayh, the senator from Indiana. I think it was out in the western part of Mass, and he was months, perhaps 3 or 4, maybe longer, in the hospital, and thereafter had a life of continual trouble with his back and constant pain, and in his last years, it was difficult for him to walk. But I remember interviews with him from his cot, whoever he was, and maybe the Mass General. And I just remember how chipper he seemed. And then I recently heard a tape of Lyndon Johnson talking to him in the hospital. And Teddy is in traction, his feet are up, his head is immobile. And he and Johnson are just going back, and he's got Johnson laughing, and you know, Johnson said to him words to the effect of, "Young man, you've really got the makings here. if your temperament can triumph over something like this, then traction can't move, and you're laughing and making the, you know, trying to minimize it, you're going to go places."
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are opening our phone lines this hour to our local listeners in Kennedy Country, Boston, and beyond for your memories, your thoughts on Ted Kennedy. Kevin Cullen is with us this hour from the Boston Globe. Our own Jack Beatty is here. Let's check in with WBUR reporter Sasha Pfeiffer. She's on Martha's Vineyard, where the President, Barack Obama, shared his thoughts and statement on the passing of Senator Ted Kennedy today. Sasha Pfeiffer, thanks for being there. What are you seeing? I understand you're at the West Tisbury Farmers Market. What are people saying about passing of Ted Kennedy?
It's a big Wednesday morning event. There are a lot of people here, and word is beginning to spread quickly that Ted Kennedy died overnight. In fact, the flags around the island are beginning to go half-mast. What's been interesting is that even though it's been well known that Kennedy has been quite sick, there's still an extreme sense of shock for many people who hadn't heard yet. I think that many of them say they consider him as someone called him, a rock of Massachusetts and such a huge symbol of Massachusetts politics and even national history, that it's hard to imagine him gone, a lot of them say. Many people are also saying that it brings back pretty emotional memories of JFK and RFK and their assassinations, and it just is a real flood of memory and emotion for a lot of people.
course, you're in sailing country. They're not all sailors, but plenty. And it was Ted Kennedy's great passion out of Hyannisport. Many stops on the vineyard in Nantucket. I guess plenty of moorings familiar with his boat there.
Exactly. You know, either a lot of, I'm running into a lot of people from the New England area, New York and Connecticut. And, you know, even those people say that he was a national figure. And a lot of people have been echoing sort of similar sentiment that, at least among people who voted for him, they felt that he was someone they could believe in. He was someone that voted, they think, based on his beliefs and not so much for popularity or politics. Someone said to me, you know, he's someone I could vote on in confidence that I knew would vote the way I hoped he would vote. Even people who didn't agree with Kennedy, particularly in the area of healthcare reform, think it's a loss. Someone said it's quite a cruel twist of fate that just as healthcare reform is back to national prominence, Ted Kennedy won't have a chance to vote on this effort that he's put so much of his strength and voice behind.
But he pushed a long time on that front. Sasha Pfeiffer, WBR reporter at the West Tisbury Farmers Market on Martha's Vineyard. Thank you very much for being with us, Sasha.
You're welcome.
Let's bring back the voice of Ted Kennedy for a moment here, a painful moment. This is June 8th, 1968. This is at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. Ted Kennedy spoke at the funeral of his assassinated brother, Robert Kennedy.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world. As he said many times in many parts of this nation, to those he touched and who sought to touch him, some men see things as they are and say why. I dream things that never were and say why not.
Ted Kennedy, June 8th, 1968, at the funeral of his assassinated brother, Robert Kennedy, and the baby of the family, the last of nine children, and took those blows along with the country, but intimately, his brothers assassinated and kept on going to quite a remarkable career. Nathan in Boston, you're on the air.
I have a nicer story, actually, as far as having met Senator Kennedy. The weekend my wife and I got engaged, we took the ferry to Nantucket, and just before we were leaving, Senator Kennedy was ushered aboard and quickly swept up front, and we had a pretty uneventful ride. Everyone was at tables having cocktails,
yeah.
And it was a good party next to us. And as we came in and docked, the senator came out and turned to the party next to us and said, "Gentlemen, how was the trip over?" And they were all like, "Oh, Senator, great! It was a great trip." And he said, "Excellent. Please remember to vote Democrat."
Politician on the ferry on the way to Nantucket and still working the crowd. Nathan, thank you. Let me get one from John in Boston. John, you're on the air.
Tom, how are you?
Well, John, what do you know?
Well, I have a wonderful little anecdote about I have a small cleaning business, and one of my accounts is Senator Kennedy's townhouse on Marlborough Street.
Uh-huh.
And I would occasionally see him out in the morning fairly early walking the dog. One morning, he's out there with the dog about 7:30. He comes over and he says, "I forgot my key." I said, "I'm sorry, sir, but I'm going to have an ID." He lost it. He gave me a great clap on the shoulder, and we had a great laugh. He was just a delight to see, and I'm going to miss him.
That's good. Walking the dog on Marlborough Street. That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that, John. And one more from Linda in Pepperell, Massachusetts. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Linda.
I'm so overwhelmed with sadness. It's like a personal loss. I was reading The Lost Lion by the Boston Globe reporters.
Yes,
and
big biography.
Yes, and I couldn't finish it. I got close to the end, and he was diagnosed with the brain cancer. And all I could think of, my husband's a physician, and he just said he doesn't have long. And I just felt if I finished the book, I would lose him sooner. It was I'm very emotional about it. And my husband said when he died that he lived a long time with that brain cancer. Mm. And we have rooted so hard for him because he's come back and he's fought back and fought back and fought back for the people of this country. And we were really rooting for him to beat that brain cancer.
With those pages left untouched. And I understand that, Lyndon, and I appreciate that. Kevin Cullen, what about it? As this man goes, John and Bobby and now Teddy, what does it mean for this part of the country in terms of political sway, in terms of, I mean, the light maybe never did shine so bright as when that Klan was in its fullness?
Well, it really is the end of an era. It's not only the end. I mean, it's sort of, you know, some of the Kennedy kids are bright and ambitious and all those things, but it's a different era now. And I don't see the Kennedy dynasty continuing to the same extent. And just politically, is there anybody who's going to serve as long and have as much of a legislative legacy as Ted Kennedy in the U.S. Senate? I mean, I'm sure people said that when Babe Ruth retired. It's never going to be broken. But you look at this and you just look at the way that politics act. I just can't imagine that there will be anybody, certainly in our lifetime, that will match that.
Jack, I mean, we have to be careful not to overstate here. Massachusetts and Boston have a long political history. It goes right back to the beginning. And, you know, the list of the illustrious is long as well. And yet, in the 20th century and into this one, it was the Kennedy name that put it up in the big national lights and gave it clout like no other.
Oh, no question about it. Boston was a failing backwater in the 1950s, and the only bright thing in the sky was the career of John F. Kennedy and his campaign for the presidency, his senatorial campaigns. And it meant everything to this region. And I think it meant an awful lot to Irish America as well. You know, those memories have faded now. The anthropologist Florian Zanicki once said that America is the euthanasia of memories. Yeah, and a lot of them have gone. But they weren't so faded in 1960, and people remembered 1928, and they remembered the campaign against Al Smith, the first Catholic candidate. And for the first time since the Civil War, Massachusetts went for a Democrat because of Al Smith. And it wasn't just the Irish. It was the Italians. It was the Jews. It was all the marginal people, the new people, who rejected the party of Herbert Hoover for the first time since the Civil War. And, of course, the prejudice that poured out against Al Smith, the famous leaflet that was given out in Iowa showing a picture of a tunnel, and that it was actually the Holland Tunnel, and it said the Pope's secret tunnel to Washington, or, you know, something like that. And that left a real feeling of inferiority and of injury in Irish America. And so the people, to say that people were joyous that John F. Kennedy won the presidency, just in that ethnic bar, is to understate matters. It was finally saying to the Irish, you have arrived.
And that, Kevin Cullen, is a connection Ted Kennedy never lost sight of.
Absolutely. You know, 2 years ago, I was walking down to Hanover Street in the north end of Boston, which, you know, used to be an Italian section, and before that was very Irish. And I looked at my mobile phone was ringing. I looked at it, and I could see it was Ted, you know. So I answer the phone, and I said, do you know that I'm standing about 100 feet from where your mother was born? And he totally ignored what I said. He goes, guess who I just sat next to? And I said, I don't know who. He goes, Baroness Paisley. When the power-sharing government in Northern Ireland was up after that stop and start and all the whether the IRA would disarm and all this stuff, they put the thing back together, and Ian Paisley, the fundamentalist Protestant preacher who had railed against what he called the Kennedy stable of Boston Republicanism, with a small r, was the leader of that government with Martin McGuinness, who was one-time IRA commander. And when Ted Kennedy, who was George Bush's designee to represent the American government for the inaugural session of this power-sharing government 2 years ago, when he walked in to storm it, Eileen Paisley, also known as Baroness Paisley, Ian Paisley's wife, called him over, beckoned him over, and she said, would you sit with me, please? And I just said, this is unbelievable. And I'm looking at my phone, and Teddy's standing in Belfast, and I'm standing in the North End, and I'm saying, this really is a funny life.
Tying the whole world together right there from near Mom's birthplace. Jonathan in Charlestown, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom, how you doing today?
We're all right. What are you thinking about Ted Kennedy today, Jonathan?
I'll tell you, Tom, I grew up with a terrible dyslexia, a tough time with learning disabilities. And my grandfather was a personal good friend of the Kennedy family and appointed by John F. Kennedy to be the district U.S. Marshal in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
When I met Teddy and I told him of my problem and I wanted to pursue politics, he says, John, he says, go with what you believe, and it's not how you start out in life, it's how you end up. And if you truly believe that you're going to be a politician, go to it. And I miss him daily. I'm devastated over this. And he was just a great icon. What a great person.
There's the touch in your life right there and back through the Kennedy generations. Jonathan, thank you for calling. Let me go on from Cambridge. Blocker, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It's nice to talk with you.
You too.
I'm a Texan, but I've lived in Massachusetts long enough to be very pleased to have voted for Teddy the last five times he stood for the Senate.
That's a long time.
And the one thing I called with is a quotation from a man named Robert Draper, who is speaking of his own grandfather, Leon Jaworski, who was, as I'm sure you recall, the Watergate special prosecutor.
Sure.
The quotation was in Texas Monthly Magazine in 1994. I've held on to it for a long time. But here he is. Draper has been asked about his grandfather, Jaworski, and he says, can a greatly flawed man still be considered great? From my own experience, my answer would be, that's the only kind of great man there is.
Greatly flawed. And you call with this on the day that Ted Kennedy leaves us, Blocker.
Well, he is one of the great ones. The very first time I saw Ted, I was a freshly minted high school graduate on a tour of Washington in 1966, and he was still wearing his back brace on the floor of the Senate when we saw him. And the very last time I saw him, he had somehow been drafted to be guest conductor of the Harvard Band in the post-game concert after a Harvard-Yale football game, having the time of his life. So I think for all of his enormous vitality and his wonderful gifts as a legislator, I hope we can all see in this that in the last 15 months he's taught us a wonderful, wonderful lesson about how to die gracefully. Has anyone ever done it so publicly and so well?
And right out on the pier. Blocker, thank you so much for that. Jack Beatty, greatly flawed man, the only kind of great man there is.
That says it all. I mean, you look at the biography of anybody who's achieved eminence, and you're going to see, my God, such flaws, and yet people triumphing over them. That was the thing about this fellow. Again and again, he transcended himself and his own mistakes. And I think he showed people, you know, you can come back after mistakes. Of course, it's easy enough to do if you're a Kennedy. But, if I may read a quotation, this is one from Yeats, and he's talking about someone. He says, being Irish, he had an abiding sense of tragedy, which sustained him through temporary periods of joy. And you know, there was that feeling in Ted, for all the joy and the directing the band and so on, the strain of melancholy the Times talks about. How could there not be, given he's the only of the four brothers, he's the only one to die a nonviolent natural death. I mean, how could it not be a strain of melancholy? But still, those periods of joy, and I think his greatness comes out of that melancholy, that he knew what sadness was, he knew what suffering was like, and he connected with the sadness and suffering of other people and thought, if we can make a difference, even a little difference, to palliate that, let's do it.
A man of large faith and large flaws, the Times writes, drank deeply, sang loudly. He was a Kennedy. Kevin Cullen, our time grows short. There's so many callers I'm not going to get to, and I'm sorry for that. But a final thought, a final image of Ted Kennedy that will stay with you, Kevin.
My final thought here is that it was almost a half century ago that Robert Frost urged Jack Kennedy at his inauguration to be more Irish than Harvard. I think Ted Kennedy succeeded so much because he took that advice to heart.
and what did it mean in his life, in his work?
Well, I think, you know, it was this, the idea of being engaged, and we mentioned it, that Ireland was his great-grandfather came over here, and he was never far from Ireland, and his life worked there, because, you know, it's that old great line that Bruce Bowling, the first African-American city council president in Boston, told me, in this town, we're all Irish by osmosis.
If not, by birth. And in Ted Kennedy's case, no question of that. A big one passes, a great one in this town, from a family of so much imprint here, so deep, it will be absolutely fascinating in the years ahead to see how the family dynasty continues to roll out or does not. But for today, we remember Ted Kennedy, and I'm so grateful to everyone for helping us do that. Kevin Cullen with the Boston Globe, it's always great to have you here, even in these circumstances. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks,
Kevin.
Tom.
And Jack Beatty, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for your calls. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.